Ring, ring.
Here we go. Chuckley Sherry Elliker show. Yeah, starring Sherry Elliker.
Ring, ring.
You know, sometimes I feel sorry for you.
Sometimes? Ring, ring.
Seriously, you're like my sister. I was talking to my sister today. Oh, the years of torture. And then, you know, now I'm older and I don't have her around, but oh, I got you.
You got me.
And it is just, it's just so much fun.
Ring, ring.
I should say that what happened was earlier, I knew I'd do this to you, and I knew I'd do it to you. I said, oh, why you do ring, ring, and I'll pick up the phone. I'll try a new hello. And then, and the sound of your voice, Sherry, you were so happy to do it. And I thought, oh, she.
Ring, ring.
And I just let you keep going, ring, ring. Ring, ring.
That's the mark of a good fall guy.
Yeah.
The good foil, right?
Straight
every
man.
Time.
Okay, funny, yeah. Greatest straight man in the world. Greatest straight man in the world.
I'm always enthusiastic.
Yeah. Ring, ring.
Okay, really what's that straight man joke along. Again? Do it again.
No. Now you're toying
work.
With me. No, I see what you're
no.
doing. No. Oh, no. Not so fast. Now you're toying with me. Why don't you tell that joke again? Screw you.
Ring, ring.
Okay. Why is the Washington, why are we taxing the plastic bag? So remember when everybody panicked, not everybody, when the government panicked, okay, who is it, Jeff Duchin or somebody? No more. Don't bring your bags to the grocery store. You were going to lift the ban on plastic bags because of the pandemic. Remember that old stupid thing?
Mm-hmm.
Your virus is going to be spreading on your reusable bags, everybody at home at Whole Foods. So we're going to let you use plastic bags. I'm sure people are really upset about having using plastic bags. So now people are upset. Like, well, Jesse Jones finds out that we pay tax on the plastic bag.
A simple request for a bag has Stephanie Yazel feeling taxed.
And he said, "That's 9 cents." And I said, 9 cents, the bag fee is $8. And he said it's taxable.
Hopefully it encourages people to bring their own bags.
Yep. Dan Schachter from Ken's Market in Seattle says the state's bag fee, which was enacted last fall, is subject to sales tax.
Every 8 cent bag is a 9 cent charge to the consumer.
By the way, just so you know, I looked it up because I have no life. The cost to the grocery store is 1 cent per bag.
So a plastic bag.
One bag, yeah.
Every time.
Okay.
Every time. And if it's a double bag, that's 18 cents.
But it's not pennies when you multiply it by the amount of commerce that goes on in a state in a day or a week or a month.
The average family of four uses 1,040 plastic bags a year. Again, I have no life.
I
have a problem with the taxing of a fee. To me, that's just another way to stick your hand in somebody's pocket.
Why are we taxing the fee?
Right. So really the way it's set up is they are selling that bag. So that bag is a sale. So in this state, we tax sales.
Strom Peterson wrote the first bag law in the state as a councilman for the city of Edmonds more than a decade ago. As a state.
Oh, I'd love to be able to debate that guy in a bar. Oh. Or just anywhere, but a bar.
Mm-hmm. More than like something that would be official. You would rather do it in a bar.
Yeah, you're just sitting there and chatting with a guy. And they go, oh, yeah, what do you, oh, have you met, what's the guy's name? Whatever. Yeah, you met him? Yeah, he's the guy that came up with the bag. Oh, really? And then I would just, I'd take him apart like a plastic bag.
Representative. He is the force behind the state law that went into effect last October. His goal, singular.
This law will reduce the factor of plastic bags in Washington by millions. Literally millions of bags of those thin little flimsy plastic bags won't be used in Washington.
Okay, so here's what I'd say to him. So of the three choices, paper,
recyclable bag that you carry in there or plastic? What is better for the environment? Oh, this guy would say, oh, the one you carry in. I would then explain that the amount of damage done to the environment by having to grow the cotton, to be able to harvest the cotton, to be able to have fertilizer on the cotton, the runoff from the field, the cotton bag is the worst. Second in the list is then the paper bag, because that also involves runoff and fertilizer as you have to grow the trees. And then all that fertilizer runs into the water supply. The best thing of the three, although all are horrible apparently, plastic is the best. That's Todd Myers from the Washington Policy Center. Boom, done. You owe me a beer.
You think he'd be okay with that? Okay.
Boom, done, you owe me beer? Yeah.
But is the law working for grocers?
We haven't really seen, you know, more people bring their own reusable bags. The volume of paper bags that come out the store are about the same.
Dan's store goes through 17,000 paper bags a month.
Do you break even with the fee or not?
No, these paper bags here cost us 26 cents a piece.
And according to the Department of Ecology, the law impacts almost all retail businesses.
Clothing stores, McDonald's, most any restaurant retail.
Laura Davies is the Solid Waste Program Manager for the Department of Ecology, the agency that enforces the law.
Thin film plastic bags, and they need to be replaced by reusable bags by customers, or customers can.
Oh, I hope she would be at the bar with him. They'd both be out.
You take them both on.
Oh.
Would you do one at a time, or let them be on a team, and then you'd let them have their own little, you know, duo thing, and you would take them both at the same time?
Yeah, you know, I'd have like a Harvey Wallbanger or something with a straw in it, and I wouldn't even look up at him. I would just be just stirring the thing and just talking straight ahead. Maybe there's a mirror in front of me, like at those bars with the mirrors, and I don't even actually make contact with them. And I'm just slowly just lowing, boom, each fact, bang, bang,
and
bang.
You'd have soft voice, so they'd have to lean in to listen to you, but you just have this stream of consciousness, like you knew exactly what you were going to say.
And I'd take the straw and I'd certainly just twist it slowly, and then I'd take a sip and then put the thing back down again. Yeah, that's exactly how it would work, and I just finish him off that way. And
boom,
I turn over. You met my? Have you met my partner here, Sherry? And you
boom,
go,
done. You owe me a beer.
Yeah, ring, ring.
Yeah,
ring, ring.
And they're like, "What the hell is she saying?"
Yeah.
Right. I'm sorry. I've lost track of Jesse's story. The good news is, Jacob, sum it all up.
Okay, sorry, I wasn't prepared for this responsibility. There's, you know, the good news. Well, actually, Jesse Jones, I think he ends the piece by saying, you know, he just recommends people, actually, if you want to avoid all this, avoid the fee, avoid the 1 cent tax on top of the fee. You just don't bring it. Bring your
10.1% sales tax rate goes to the state and the regional transportation authority.
We've seen some businesses that should be charging the bag fee, and they don't. But because of COVID, the enforcement rollout has been real slow. And since no one's been taken to task yet, I won't be a snitch. But I know who you are.
Sorry, I forgot you like. Yeah,
I'm with
a threat to the girl. Oh, this is some stores aren't even assessing the fee at all. So you could also, I suppose, go to a store that just isn't complying with state law.
Oh, I see. Oh, got it. How about this woman? My brother sent me this and said, I don't know why I love this story so much, but Duke's senior commencement speech appears plagiarized from a 2014 address at Harvard. Did they catch her because she actually said, we as graduates of Harvard, or did she was able to change that part of it?
No, she, the Duke people, actually, the school, the Duke Chronicle, the school's independent newspaper, reported on the similarities after they compared the two speeches. She won a contest. She won a contest because what she had to do was she had to write like some kind of a 250-word speech outline. This was in March. And they selected, you know, her speech as the one to be given. And here's what she said. When I was asked to give the commencement speech, I was thrilled by such an honor, and I sought advice from respected friends and family about topics I might address. I was embarrassed and confused to find out too late that some of the suggested passages were taken from a recent commencement speech at another university. I take full responsibility for this oversight, and I regret if this incident has in any way distracted from the accomplishments of the Duke class of 2022. So she blamed it on people giving her stuff.
On other people telling her.
When I first got here, someone told me.
This is Harvard 2014, but you probably knew that because most of you listening probably went to Harvard.
If Harvard shut its gates, it could be its own country, just like the Vatican.
I got a laugh. Wow.
I know.
They must have been drinking. And then here's your Duke graduate.
She soon came to realize that if Duke were to dig a moat around its perimeter and fill that with water, it could be its own tiny island nation, like Cuba or maybe even Sri Lanka.
Oh, there's more.
We had our own version of the Statue of Liberty, the John Harvard statue, our own embassies, the Harvard clubs of Boston and London, a tax collection agency, the Harvard Alumni Association.
Boom. Always do the jokes. Do three. That's how you do it right there. Boy, I've seen boom a lot. All right. That's an annoying thing, isn't it? Someone's as bad as Sherry's. Ring, 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 ring.
And an endowment larger than more than half the world's country's GDPs.
Okay. And now here's your Duke graduate.
We also have our own version of Christ the Redeemer, the statue of James Buchanan Duke standing atop an octagonal pedestal to grace Abelquad. We also have an IRS with its surprisingly bubbly fleet of tax collectors, the Duke Alumni Association. We also have the equivalent of the Federal Reserve, DUMAC, which manages an endowment larger than the GDP of one-third of the countries in the world.
Didn't get the laugh she's hoping for. How did somebody find this?
I don't know how they found it, but what's apparent is that when she said that she got advice from friends and family, this all came from one speech. So did all of her friends and family refer to this one speech? I mean, it doesn't make any sense, right? Like if somebody said, Socrates said this, or so-and-so said this, or whatever, right, and you kind of, you know, put something together.
Yeah.
Oh, so they all thought, I'll send you little snippets from the exact same speech.
Come on. Is she the valedictorian, or was she the one chosen to give the speech?
Yeah, she just was chosen to give the speech.
Okay. Was she also nominated most likely to plagiarize from a Harvard speech?
she won that hands down, but I don't know how she got it. Yeah.
Here's how she finished it. Hold on.
Ring, ring.
Well, then she's plagiarizing from our show. So
that's sad. I had heard that more kids cheat in college than ever before. I mean, even the is it West Point that's got the like super duper rules? There's no cheating. If you cheat, then you get thumb screws or something like that. That cheating in college is rampant, and you're able to catch. There's all sorts of, you can have people write essays for you. You can go online, have essays written, and then there's apps that professors use that can stick your essay, your term paper in. It can find giant sections that have been lifted and plagiarized. Have you seen this thing?
Oh, yeah. It's very sophisticated now, where you can, and I think you can go online and check and make sure that you're not plagiarizing somebody. There's some kind of program or something that you can do.
Yes, right. We used to get, thank God for the Encyclopedia Britannica. When I was a kid, we had the big blue, you know, all the books.
Mm-hmm.
And all you do is just sit there, you know, like mitosis or meiosis. You just set your little copybook up, and I would write, just lift out just the entire things and just be writing whatever is on mitosis and this. And then I wouldn't be paying attention. I would then, my eye wouldn't scan to the next line and I'd just write it again. So it'd be like twice I'd written the exact same thing. And then, you know, you'd hand that in. Of course the person knew you'd just, you know, lifted it, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably did that. But I mean, you know, did the teacher also have the same encyclopedias where they could go back and take a look and find it? I mean, they probably would know from the vocabulary that you use if you're, you know, lifting something that sounds a lot more sophisticated than your regular speech, or something right. that a 9-year-old wouldn't say, that it's a little obvious.
The guiltiest I've ever felt was when my mom went to help me with Moses and the burning bush and the tablets, mm-hmm. the Ten Commandments. And it was a big poster board, and I'm screwing it up. And she goes, here, let me just fill in the tablets for you. And with that, because she was an artist, she just took over and got really into it. And then she goes, oh, there, that's good. Now, why don't you do a little coloring down there? So I think I colored Moses' sandals. And I took it into school, and the teacher's like, oh, come on. And it was hanging up on the wall with all the other kids' work. And it was like, even the kids are like, how did you make the bushes on fire like that? It's like, oh, I use a technique.
I worked all night.
Yeah, my mom, even the teachers, why don't you take this home to your mom and why don't you try to do the project on your own?
Mm. Oh, busted.
Now whenever I think about Moses and the burning bush, yeah, and the tablets. And I think one of them was, do not lie, do not steal, don't have your mom do your artwork. I think it was the 11th or 12th.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic that you cheated on that particular assignment. But
it wasn't my mom. That is my mom. She just took over on that one. I should have called her.
She was helping. Ring, ring.
Yeah. All right.
If it happens, it happens.
What I say. Take your car to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. They've got 16 locations, been around for 52 years. The great people at Bucky's Auto Service Centers can't wait to work on that car of yours. You just give them a call. You can call them up and just tell them what kind of car you have and what the problem is. And you just
ring,
say,
ring.
And they'll say, yes, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. All right. Are we allowed to play this on the air? Are we going to just lose our license if we happen to play with this Seattle or Cleveland Guardians?
Well, I've bleeped the offending sound, although I suppose there's a question of whether or not he actually said something inappropriate. It does sound like he did.
The outfielder's name is Sheets, right? Sleets? Sheets? Sheets?
His name Sheets, is Gavin yeah. Sheets.
Sheets, yeah.
For like the White
like
Sox.
Like the cake.
Here we go.
There's a ball hit toward right field. Sheets coming in.
Like the cake? How about like the bed?
I thought that too. I was like, who thinks of that? Sheets.
Yeah,
like the gas station.
I don't know.
Sheets.
You know, sheets, like sheets of rain.
And it's not a sheets cake, it's a sheet cake.
Well, if there's multiple, is it sheet cakes or sheets cake?
Where is our license?
It'd be sheet cake.
Back to the story. Back to the story. She will.
There's a ball hit toward right field. Sheets coming in. Drops the ball! The Guardians will score first as Quan comes home.
By the way, let me say something about Quan. When Quan was a little kid, he used to strike out. Every time he struck out, he would go into the dugout and cry. And he said to himself, I am not going to strike out. I'm just going to stop striking out. So by the time he hits 12 or 13, he learns to hit the ball. He's hitting 309. The guy has, he doesn't get on base, gets on base 90% of the time. Saquon playing for Cleveland. That's right.
Into second base is Owen Miller.
Are
and
you
just simply botched it.
I mean, I thought it might drop in front when it went off the bat, but when I saw he got there, he might have taken his eye off it. Now he's a first baseman, but he's playing right field, but it's a very catchable ball. Right there, clank off the fingers, and it falls. So they will play from in front today.
He didn't say the S word because there's no way he would have just kept going if he'd done. And the other guy would have jumped in. Oh, hey, they could do that whole thing, right?
I think he did. I think he really did. It sounded like it.
It sounded like a big beep to me.
Well, that's true.
Did he have to apologize, or did they get fined, or did anybody say anything to them? Is baseball had to say anything about the use of the foul word?
So far, so good. They haven't said anything. They just kept moving.
Keep going. There's this guy that's decided he is going to become famous by coming up with, you know, clever sayings regarding strikeout or home runs or foul balls and stuff like that. So he is now, he's with the Fredericksburg Nationals. He's the play-by-play announcer, Joey Zamboni. Zamboni?
Yeah, I think it's Zamboni. Zamboni. Zambonio.
And something else, Kuchera! Living on the corner like a recently evicted crossing guard. Licking the corner like a sidewalk taste tester. Got him.
I go, huh? Like a sidewalk taste tester?
He's got a lot of them. He actually writes these like poetry, he says. He tries to get them all prepared before.
By the way, this is a mashup of all these. This isn't him, just one after another. Guy's looking at the plate. He's thinking about it like a giant sheet cake.
Sheets cake.
Lick in the corner like a sidewalk taste tester. Got him. Lick in the corner like a neglected zebra lapping up a styrofoam cup of Mr. Piv at an underfunded zoo. 408 average through 14 games. Reaches after this. Bounces it toward the hole at short. Backhand jump to first, young fella. Flash in the leather like a nudist colony on a dude ranch retreat. Dr. Radical. Check swing into the mitt. Paying on the squeeze. Big Fizz Cola. Slicing him up like a citrus-based 90s beverage. Two against the shortstop Sykes. Get him out of there, baby. Dr. Thunder, pure room temperature, off-brand American chemicals.
Cool. Okay, here's a home run call. I should get Ryan to find out what he thinks of this.
Infante won't let him out the left. Lock it. Cut.
That's out of here like the VU meter on my microphone.
Yeah. One of them is it's cleaner than a Lysol brand OnlyFans account.
Yeah, okay.
Get rocket! Restock it! Slam it, Sammy!
Jacob, why are you doing this to the listeners?
It's got seven for the season!
He's like trying to find one of them. He's got one on his phone. He's like, oh God, I gotta come on. Where is it?
It's coming.
Sammy Infante kicking like an overcaffeinated karate instructor.
Oof, wow.
This article about him in the Washington Post is so long. I can't believe they spent this much time on this guy.
I can't believe we're doing as much. My friend Fred just wrote in enough. I know. I used to like listening to Dennis Miller when he did Monday Night Football because his things were always it's like Archimedes down there. Like here he is explaining one time with Al Michaels.
And Al's a genius. He's like that cat on the Sullivan Show spinning the plates. Da, 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 da. He's kicking it to the debut on the network, and then he takes it over to the owner's story. He's got salary cap. He calls the play, throws it to Fauci for the telestrator, throw it to me for the weird rejoinder, regather it for the next hike, and I'm sitting there going, guy's a genius. But the only thing is, Al, you could make him laugh, and then he'd get thrown off. He couldn't gather himself. And my arcane references really made him laugh. So I remember when I were watching this game, this guy's getting his ankle wrapped, and I say to Al on the air, I say, you know, Bino, and I used to call him Venus, and they made me stop because they thought I was saying penis. And I know I just said penis, don't kill yourself.
It's okay, you said it twice, it's fine.
I said Venus, and I get a note from Tagliabue or something. Are you calling him penis? Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm calling Al Michael penis. But so I can't call him Venus anymore. So I go, Bino, and then they're saying, is that the fart medication? Oh, for God's sake, leave me alone. So I go, you know, Al, I haven't seen that much fabric used since the environmental artist Christo wrapped the Pont Neuf Bridge in Paris. And Al hits his sneeze button, which cuts his voice out to the home viewer, and he looks at me and goes, what the blank are you talking about? Ohmeyer is down in the truck, and he fancies himself an artificial auto. I actually hear Ohmeyer say, no, well, Christo, environmental artist, solid reference, 3rd and 6th, boys, let's go.
I did enjoy his stuff, you know.
Me too.
Yeah.
I love Dennis Miller. I thought he was so smart, and just everything about him was clever and interesting. What happened to him? Where did he go?
That's just what caused it. Nobody could relate to him, and they kicked him out of the booth on that one. He's like the Cyclops at an ophthalmology conference. You know, it's like that kind of weird sort of stuff. And you're like, huh? You're like, and then Al Michaels had to pick it up for the next thing. I always thought it was sort of a nice, how's he gonna sort of throw something in there? He didn't last long in the booth.
But he didn't, I mean, where is he now? What is he doing?
Oh, then he has his own radio show. Yeah. I think he still has everybody's got a podcast, so he's probably has a podcast or something like that, so, yeah. You know, don't get my brother started on the guy that made the call during the Russia-USSR hockey game. Do you believe in miracles? Mm-hmm. My brother will go on for an hour and a half about what a lame thing that was, that the guy planned ahead. He's got this whole analysis of it. I'm like, whew, wow, Chuck. It's like, oh, my God. Like, that guy, get me started on that one.
That's like classic, right? I mean, that's just a...
Do you believe in miracles? Chuck, yeah. If we get Chuck on the phone, he'd go for 45 minutes on why that was not a great expression.
But so, you heard it so much over and over and over again.
All right, get him on the phone. He'll tell you.
I'll call him.
Yeah, ring, ring.
Call him. All right.
Sorry.
I would not be so quick to laugh at Sherry's ring ring because I still have you going.
Oh.
All right.
That's not what it sounds like.
All right, here we go. The John Curley, Sherry Ehrlicher show. Fred, thanks for writing. I just got off the phone with my brother. I said, come on. He goes, no, I'm not coming on your stupid show. It's like, okay. He goes, you can explain it. I said, okay. And then he explained it to me, Sherry. If you're just joining us, talk about Al Michaels and the famous, because we were just talking announcing, the guy doing the baseball calls and stuff like that. And I brought up, do you believe in miracles? Which really wasn't even the big game. It wasn't the final big hockey game, but it was one of them anyway. My brother's point is that Al Michaels walked into the arena with that thing in his pocket. He knew he was going to say it, and he delivered it to give the impression that he just, you know, spontaneously. And then Chuck said, so if you want to hear spontaneous, where someone's watching a sporting event occur right in front of them, and then they react to it as you're reacting, he said, listen to the Kentucky Derby and compare that guy calling Rich Strike to Al Michaels. This is how my brother and I spend our time, to Al Michaels calling that goal in the hockey game. So Exhibit A would be Al Michaels. Anytime, Your Honor.
He's quiet.
Do you want? What, I have miracle. Miracle.
I'll take miracle. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Here you go.
Up the shelf. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes. Unbelievable.
Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. So you had it ready to go. 5 seconds. Do you believe in miracles? You ready to go? It wasn't a spontaneous thing, right? But then you listen to some of the announcer who's watching Rich Strike come out of absolutely nowhere to win the Kentucky Derby.
And they're into the stretch. Then it's Messier, Crown Pride, and Epicenter is coming up on the outside. Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandin is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandin, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter's Sandin. Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my goodness. The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby.
See? See how he suddenly responds to it like that? See, Al was ready with the, you believe in miracles. He was ready to go.
So, but why is that a big deal? I mean, it's like, why? So
because it's a big deal. It's a big deal because people always point to it as like, oh, it's such an amazing moment. Do you believe in miracles? I mean, there's even a movie about it and everything. And it's just, Chuck says, it's not as authentic. The authenticity of the moment. Don't give somebody credit for something where, you know, it's not authentic. My brother and I were sitting at something. I forget who it was that was giving some famous speech. We're all there at some event. And this guy gets up there and gives a speech, and people later on were like, wow, that was amazing. It was off the top of his head. What an amazing speaker. And I turned to my brother and I said, he has no respect for us as an audience. what are you talking about? That was great. I said, because he didn't prepare. You could tell he didn't prepare anything. He got up there and just thought, well, I'm so interesting and my stories are so great, I could just sort of cobble them all together and I'll give you 45 minutes of this sort of leftover slop and you'll all think it's great. Yeah, my brother and I are big critics of that kind of stuff. Like, we don't ever give standing ovations. Even if everybody's standing up, all, not unless it's great. Seattle hands them out like candy to dry cleaner. But I just sit there and I've sat like in front row, my brother and I front row at a concert, and everybody else is standing up, and there's Van Morrison on stage, pretty much looking down at the two of us, and we're like, nope, we'll give you this, but you sucked, okay? I'm going to give you this, but I am not standing up. I am not going to stand up.
All right, quick rapid fire. Okay, Barry Manilow, standing ovation, no, yes or no?
Oh, of course.
Okay,
of course.
All right.
I didn't even see, I took my chair and threw it up on the stage.
Well, at least it was just your chair.
You didn't take your bra off?
I had my bra on, thank you. I wrapped my undies around the chair. No, because he put on a good show. Van Morrison didn't deserve the standing ovation.
All right, let's say one of your kids was in a play, no matter how bad it was. Standing ovation?
No. No, get up early.
Come on.
My kids' plays sucked. And every video I have of it is always, I'm just zooming in just on them. And Chuck never knew the words. We saw her. Yeah, Annie. She never learned the words. She's like staring and looking at other people. It's a hard knock life. It's a hard knock life.
Real proud moments, huh?
Yeah. And her grandmother gave her a bouquet of roses, and Lacey took it back and said, don't give this to her. She never learned the lines, and gave it back to my grandmother.
No.
It's a hard knock life.
She was little. She probably didn't want to.
Learn your lines.
Stage fright. It's a real thing.
No, stage fright. She's a curly. Learn your lines. Do you believe in miracles?
Like that line.